The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome to the Apologetics Canada Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger here.
Terry Crosby.
Andy, you sound a little...
I'm dying, man. Anybody else? Just it's the cold season, you know?
Yeah.
I
haven't got it yet.
Yeah, so I was coughing all night last night. And you guys ever had it where you take the, you know, like the NyQuil or whatever? And it's supposed to be the nighttime stuff, but it has the opposite effect.
It keeps you up all
yeah,
night.
Yeah, and you're like wide awake. That happened last night. I'm just staring at the ceiling. There was a windstorm here in British Columbia last night. And I just heard the wind all night. It was just awful.
Yeah.
So if we hear some incoherent stuff coming out of your mouth, it's the NyQuil?
Yeah, and if I fall asleep at any point in this podcast, just let me be.
If you start
just
hearing...
Just carry on.
If you start hearing like drilling, you know what's going on.
Oh man.
Yeah. My family has been for 2 months straight. It's just been one thing after another.
That's the joys of kids, man.
Yeah. Especially first year of daycare. Apparently it is horrendous because they bring everything home.
It's brutal. They more than just bring it home. They contract this disease and then they incubate it. They turn it into a deadly disease. And then they pass it on to you.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah. I go to the gym, and I don't touch my hands to my face, anything at all when I'm there.
Are you one of those people? Do you do the antibiotic thing, like where you're like that cream or whatever they have, those little dispensers?
No, I don't go that far, no.
See, I'm the opposite, man. I just go around licking things. Like, it's called the immune booster, and clearly didn't work.
It's not working
for me on this one.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we just heard from daycare yesterday that one of the kids there had lice, so he was sent back home, or she was sent back home.
Oh,
so,
man. If I was a superhero, that would be my superpower, Steve.
Kill
I'm immune
lice.
To lice. Lice.
Same thing here, right?
No, I feel like a superhero when I walk in the room. They're like, "We've got a deadly, you know, like lice is spreading." You're like, "I'm fine.
I'm good.
My eyebrows may be in danger, but other than that, I'm good."
You got armpit hair.
I hardly have any hair on my body.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Oh,
Terry, you got to join the ranks.
Yeah, I could get lice in my ears and my eyebrows currently.
All right.
That's it.
All
not
right.
Nose? Not the nose?
All
not
right.
The
before nose, before this be goes bad. Any further downhill.
For those of you who don't know my physical appearance, I'm bald. Just so we're clear.
This is a NyQuil time.
And I've had this superpower since birth.
And, and I also have a shaved head. So anyway, all that to say, watch out for yourselves out there, guys. Just keep healthy and...
Echinacea.
Yeah. Anyway, let's jump into things. There have been lots of things hitting the news lately. So
a lot of annoying things.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, nothing really interesting. And in fact, you wanted to get into Meryl Streep's speech that she gave.
Yeah.
And I remember you sent it to me. You're like, "Hey, should we talk about this?" I'm like, I don't know if I want to talk about it.
But we probably should.
But we should. But then I started reading and thinking about it, and I thought, you know what? This is actually a really important subject to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to discussing this today.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk about Meryl Streep's Golden Globe speech. I'll have that up on our show notes, so if you want to hear it, it's only like 5 minutes long, so it's not that long. There is even a transcript out there that you can read in just a couple minutes if you're a fast reader. And so I'll put that up on the show notes, so make sure you go there and check that out first. It might help give you some context as to what we're talking about. And if you're not sure what we're talking about, Meryl Streep won this basically what is a Lifetime Achievement Award. And so she had a number of minutes on the stage to give her acceptance speech. And she basically took that time to display her political views on things.
Can we just pause there for a moment? Is there any other profession that gives you a Lifetime Achievement Award?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Like, I can't think of any.
The pastor's Lifetime Achievement. I can't think of anything that is as congratulatory as Hollywood
Oh, there's music. Yeah. Grammys.
So music and movies.
Music, yeah. Movies.
Do models have a lifetime achievement award?
I don't know.
I haven't heard any.
Yeah. Firemen don't. Police officers don't.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I can't think of very many.
That's interesting. I should start my own
celebrity stuff,
it's a
right?
Steiger Lifetime Achievement Award.
Name it after yourself.
Yeah. It's given to those people who display incredible humility and good looks.
And you should name it Andrew W. Steiger Award,
the AW Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah.
So let me just open it up to you guys. What did you think of that speech?
Well, you know what was interesting, man? At first, I watched it. And I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah, I really had the same reaction.
And then all of a sudden, Twitter lights up and everything. Everybody's talking about it. I'm like, man, did I listen to the same speech? Mm. Like, I went back and I'm like, because it didn't even really register to me. And then I started reading some people's response to the speech. And I realized, man, in some ways, we have been so saturated in this kind of Hollywood secular thinking that you just get used to it, you know? And there's a great post that was written by David French. I mean, it was absolutely
fantastic. National Review.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
He's not a Trump supporter.
No, he's not.
By any stretch. But what he had to say was very insightful. And one of the things that I thought was really insightful about it is, and he alludes to, is that this is why Donald Trump won. I mean, there's not a lot of people out there that are like, man, I really love everything about Donald Trump. You know, I haven't even met one of those people yet. You know that they love everything about him. But this is why Donald Trump won, is because of things like this speech.
I'd like to see the election results not as Donald Trump won, but Hillary Clinton lost.
And that, I think that's a really important point to make. It was funny. I was actually online the other day, and one of my a guy I know who just loves Trump, pledges allegiance to Trump, he even said, man, I wish Trump would stop tweeting.
I know. We were just talking about that, me and Terry, you know, in the staff kitchen today as we were kind of mulling over some of these issues. I was just like, man, Donald Trump should just quit Twitter.
He has this
perennial foot and mouth disease going on here.
Yeah, he just can't help himself. And I'm indifferent to all that, you know. I mean, politics is politics. But what I thought was really interesting is, here, let me read a part of this article. He says, I have no particular affection for Trump, but I positively loathe the condescension, alarmism, ignorance, and self-regard of the wealthy Hollywood left. And each of those elements was on full display in Streep's speech.
Yeah. I mean, when I first heard the speech, I agreed with most of the points that she was making in the sense of the incident with Trump. And then she was just basically saying that, you know, you can't do this to people. I mean, people will follow that
example.
That example of putting people down. So, I mean, one of the quotes she did was, it says, disrespect invites disrespect, violence incites violence. And when the powerful use a position to bully others, we will all lose. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think there's some good points in the sense that she made in that respect. But
yeah, I agree too. Like when you listen to Meryl Streep's speech in isolation from the current politics of the day, it's like, well, yeah, of course, this is perfect. But then you kind of cast it against the context of what's going on in the American society. Those themes that David French mentioned, like condescension and all of that stuff, really comes out.
Alarmism, ignorance, self-regard. Because here's the irony of this whole thing, right? Is oftentimes, well, first off, let's just get to the most ironic part of the whole thing. This is a lifetime achievement award for pretending to be other people. Okay, you're an actor. And this was one of David French's points. You said nothing about acting. Like, this is the thing that frustrates people, is here you've created these awards to give yourself an award for the work that you do, and then you use it as a platform to make your political statements. And I thought, you know what? We're so used to it. I didn't even think anything of it, because we are just so used to Hollywood using that platform to move their agenda.
And I thought the setting was very interesting. I mean, it was the Golden Globes, right? Like, this is one of the biggest evenings of the year for Hollywood, right? And she gets up here and puts forth her political views. And, I mean, this setting of this kind of elite people, you know, and then she gets up there and doesn't say anything, like you said, about acting, but just puts forth her political views on a really wide stage.
As though anyone cares what her political views are. Yeah. But that's the problem. That's the self-congratulatory. That's the condescension of this wealthy Hollywood elite, right? Mm-hmm. Is that they have this opinion of themselves, is that everyone should care what they mm-hmm. think. And they actually see themselves in this position of needing that they've got everything right, and that they need to kind of steer culture mm-hmm. in the right direction.
One of the things that alarmed me was that whole condescension part, because I mean, wealthy Hollywood elites. I mean, before I move on, what is Hollywood, right? I mean, it's probably what you see at Golden Globes is probably not the full picture of Hollywood, because Hollywood is such a big thing. You would have anything from like people who do menial work right at the bottom of the food chain, so to speak, or the pecking order, to, you know, people that are in, you know, technical things, engineers and set designers, all that kind of stuff, to the top of the food chain, high earning directors and actors and actresses. So sometimes I have to wonder, is Hollywood just really left-leaning, or is it just the sort of the wealthy elite at the top that's leaning? So I think Hollywood may be politically a lot more diverse than what we perceive.
However, and I think this is an important point, notice what's happening right now in the news. Donald Trump has his inauguration that's mm-hmm. coming up. And who's willing to play at it?
Oh man, he's pulling teeth trying to find somebody.
Yeah, no one, no one wants to. And we're talking about people that maybe have even voted for him, don't want to participate, right?
I think so far, as far as I know, I've heard of one person who's willing to play, but so many people have been just saying, no, I don't want to do this. And so then some conservative voices are criticizing that and go, with a bit of sarcasm, right? The liberals are all of a sudden discovering the freedom of association, right? Because before, mm-hmm. you know, a baker couple says, you know, we don't want to bake a wedding cake for same-sex marriage because we disagree with that institution, and they get their business shut down. But performers, they say, we don't want to perform for Donald Trump's inauguration. All of a sudden, that's acceptable.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. You see this double standard taking mm-hmm. place that is incredibly frustrating. And the reason why Donald Trump got elected is because people, by and large, are frustrated by this. This is the part, though, that I find interesting, don't you guys? Is when somebody like Meryl Streep gives a speech like that, she uses this "we," you know, mm-hmm. "we think like this." Meryl, do we all think like you do? You know, because it makes you wonder, how did he get elected if we all think like you do? Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like they don't realize
that. It's a disconnect.
Yeah, it's like this complete disconnect. Do you not realize that there's a lot of people out there that don't think like you do and that are frustrated with what's going on?
And to be fair, though, I think when she says "we," I think she's probably referring to
who was sitting in the audience.
But don't
in the
you think audience, she's making a major assumption there?
I think so, because there are plenty of people in Hollywood, I think, that...
Oh, you know, I saw they a lot of people with faces that didn't look exactly. like they were agreeing to me.
Right.
But there's the part, too, though, when she was talking about earlier, I didn't quite get to finish that whole point about condescension because I got rabbit trailed. But what concerns me about her condescension is the way she portrays people who support Donald Trump. Right. When she was referring to Donald Trump making fun of the disabled reporter, which apparently is a bit disputed, but I personally think Donald Trump.
I went back and looked at it. It looks like that's exactly what he's doing.
I mean, I would agree too.
And was wrong. No question about that.
To be fair, though, like, he uses the body gesture all the time, even when he's mocking himself. And he denies that, you know, he was actually mocking his disability. But I mean, everything that he's done during his campaign, I wouldn't be at all surprised.
How many people did he mimic and mock during
exactly,
his campaign?
Exactly, right?
Oh, I know. Think about the horrible things he said about Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, come on, he's not beyond doing that.
Like stuff that he said about women and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I don't know if it's in his nature, but I mean, that was certainly...
No.
Poor guy, he was just born that way.
But anyway, when Meryl Streep was referring to that incident, and she basically said that this was sort of intended to enable his supporters to show their teeth. That language of condescension is also dehumanizing, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of language that you use on people. That's the language that you use on animals. So there's condescension and dehumanization. And I thought that was really... And so when she says we, I'm just like, okay, so...
She did it again, by the way. So yeah, absolutely agree with you, Steve. So she uses dehumanizing language to say, okay, listen, we're the elite. We get it right. These other animals are getting it wrong. And then makes this a similar analogy with regards to, listen, without us, it's just going to be football and MMA.
Right.
Right? It's just mixed martial arts.
Again, condescension. And I thought
and
it
that's
was...
that's not arts, she yeah. says.
Right? I'm like, right the Asian end. In me is like, what? What did you just say?
Put the sword down.
Just take it down enough.
I thought it was really interesting that she picked on those two things, because what kind of an audience are those two things associated with, right? Probably your, because what comes to my mind is your typical, you know, blue collar, hardworking, absolutely, dirty handed, you know, people drinking beer and just kicking back after a, you know, hard day's work kind of thing, watching football or watching mixed martial arts, that sort of a thing. And I thought that was another instance of
slight against.
Yeah.
Anyway, you get the sense of there's the educated and the uneducated, and it's these uneducated, they're making these uneducated decisions, such as, you know, electing Donald Trump, that need to be educated.
So just going back to when you think of Hollywood, you know, who we think of. Well, you mentioned all the people that are in behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But I think when I think of Hollywood, I think of the faces that we see in movies, right? And that's Hollywood. And she's up on stage. That's her face. To me, it just showed even more elitism, right? Mm-hmm. In the speech and throughout.
Well,
I don't know if you guys caught this right at the end. She was talking about protecting the journalists. And she says, we are going to need them going forward. And they will need us to safeguard the truth. Did you guys catch that?
I definitely caught that towards the end of her speech, right? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, it's just that sheer self-regard there was, I think that's the self-regard that David French was talking about in his article. I'm like, that's just astonishing to me.
They harbor the truth.
They elevate themselves in this glorifying language of, you know, we're the guardians of truth kind of thing. We have it right. You have it wrong. It concerns me a little bit, because that's the kind of language that's often used to suppress other people that have dissenting views, right? It's the kind of almost like first baby steps towards authoritarian, you know, uniformity, conformity kind of a direction.
Well, and think about, because this then ties in with the idea that she's calling Donald Trump a bully, but yet at the same time, in many ways, in different articles that I read, would say, no, that's what Hollywood is. That Hollywood is a bully. David French makes this point, and he says, the secular left has taken a sledgehammer to God, family, and country, the pillars of our national culture, and Hollywood has led the way. Intentionally led the way in doing those things, using media to further their political beliefs.
Through the movies, we get all these ideas come forth, right? I mean, it is affecting our culture.
I think John,
and they know that. They do it on purpose.
They do it, yeah.
And I think John Mark Reynolds, one of my profs from Biola years ago, like, I think he was absolutely right. I was listening to one of his lectures, and he said, movies basically are 21st century novels. People don't really read much anymore, but they watch a lot of movies, and that's where they get a lot of their sort of cultural norms from, if you will. But the problem is that movies are terrible at kind of giving you this kind of a structured argumentation and things like that. You know, that's not what movies do, because movies, to use C.S. Lewis's language, they try to get through the back door of your imagination or something like that, right?
Or normalize something that isn't normal.
Yeah.
And you often will see that. By the way, did you guys not find it amusing that they're critiquing, Hollywood is critiquing Donald Trump in that Donald Trump is Hollywood.
Right. Yes.
I mean, that's where he got his fame. Yeah.
Yeah.
His TV and how he's done, by the way, if he's done a number of movie appearances as well. I was over the Christmas holiday, I was watching Home Alone again. And Donald Trump makes an appearance in Home Alone. Yeah.
I missed that one.
he's in a number of guest spots. Like, he didn't just all of a sudden show up on a TV show. I mean, and he's been in the news and many other interviews for years. He's been Hollywood, if you will.
I like what French says in near the end of the article. He says, Hollywood sells the best cultural drugs. Truth is optional. Self-indulgence is a virtue. And bullying is bravery.
Well, isn't this the case that you find with movie after movie, right? Mm-hmm. My son and I had a great conversation the other day. We left a movie. We're driving home with the family. And my son asked me this question. He says, Dad, what do you think the message of that movie was?
Wow, that's a pretty deep question.
It is a deep question.
How old is he again?
So he's 9. And I have a feeling maybe in school they were talking about what the message of a book is. And he applied it to a movie. But I can't help but think there are so many people that go to a movie and they turn their minds off.
Yeah.
And they assume that they're just being entertained. And the reality is you are not just being entertained. That movie, that medium is conveying a message from the author, from the creators of it. And an important, habit to get into is to ask, what is the message that is being communicated? And do I agree with the worldview that's being put forth?
That's a really good point. At Biola, one of my profs was Sean McDowell, Josh McDowell's son. He's a Dr. McDowell, right? He's a scholar in his own right. But anyway, he said when he was growing up, he and his father, they never did kind of any sort of devotional readings together, doing Bible readings together or anything like that. But what Josh McDowell always did was whenever they read something, whenever they watched something, he would always take the time to ask, okay, Sean, as a Christian, what did you think of that? Right. So he kind of was brought up with this
engaging.
Yeah. This was ingrained into him. Right. So he always grew up critically thinking about things that he was consuming, whether on screen or in books.
And see, that's the problem. If you don't engage with what you're consuming, you will become what you're consuming. Mm-hmm. It will slowly affect the way that you see and understand the world. Now, that's happening. I mean, we are all being affected by what we see, what we consume, but it's much worse when you don't engage with it. And I think this is one of the real challenges. And I'm making a critique of myself here because I'm saying, listen, I listened to her speech and I wasn't engaged. I was, it was just the same old Hollywood speeches, and I just thought, she makes a great point about, Donald Trump and making fun of handicapped people, which he shouldn't do. And I thought her points there were well taken, but not engaging with what's going on. Who's making the speech? When is she making the speech? What is the agenda behind making the speech? Mm-hmm. Who did she support through the elections?
Yeah.
What kind of movies has she made and what is she saying and why is she saying it? That's much more difficult to do, isn't it?
A lot of these messages, I think, are very subtle, too, in their bringing it forth, right? I mean, that's why I think we need to be more critical than not. Mm-hmm. It's there. We need to find it and discuss it with others, I guess.
Now that's the key, isn't it, Terry? We need to be able to discuss it with people. When I was coming to work this morning, I was listening to the radio, and I was listening to the major secular radio station in town. And on the way, they were talking about President Barack Obama's farewell speech. Is that what they called that one?
Yeah.
Farewell speech. Yeah. And in it, they were talking about, you know, how, you know, there's certain things that he challenged. One of those being, you know, put your phone away, you know, get off social media, like have a life. Was one of the things, but one of the big ones that they were talking about that I thought was the ironic, right, is that we need to talk more with one another and we need to have discussions more with one another, especially, and this is what they were saying, especially those people we don't agree with. Mm. And this is the part that concerns me, especially here in Canada, is when we start passing laws that, and I know we've talked about this before, but I just wanted to tie this in so that people could see why things like Bill C-16
yeah.
are important. It's because it's hampering what does need to take place. Dialogue needs to take place between people like Meryl Streep. I need to hear her, you know, people that don't agree with me. And I need to have discussions with people who don't see eye to eye with me.
Yeah.
And in that way, we get out of our little cultural bubbles and start to see and understand the culture we're actually living in. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that that's not going to take place, especially when we put in these laws that hamper this discussion.
Yeah. And that's why free speech is so important, right? And one of our volunteers wrote this piece on free speech, and he basically makes the point that, you know, why is free speech so important? Because that's the basis for all other freedoms in a democratic society, because it actually allows for conversation to take place. And in these conversations, you can hash out differing views and see the merits or demerits of each views and see which one wins out.
And see that there's a world out there that doesn't actually agree with you, you know, and you can start to understand people better and respect them better. I think that, you know, I was talking with a student just a couple of weeks ago that is studying at the University of Toronto and was there for the debates that happened with Jordan Peterson, mm-hmm. in which the audience would yell every time, you know, he would try to say anything. There's another guy named Doug Wilson who did a debate recently. I forget what university it was. But every time he would go to say anything, you mm-hmm. know, the crowd of people who disagree with him would start yelling again so that he couldn't say anything, you know. And so the student was asking me, I mean, like, what do you do in this kind of climate where you're not allowed to have an opinion if it's other than what the secular society says? Here's the worldview you can have, and this is what you can say. You know,
or in some cases, here's what you must say.
Yeah, and here's what you must say. You know, and if you're going to say anything else, well, then you're just going to be railroaded and mm-hmm. and not given a chance to even share how you see it, see the world.
Yeah. I would just say that I think culture affects us more than we realize as Christians. I think we sit down and watch these shows, and it kind of affects us. I know you mentioned a show before that you and your wife watched. I don't know if I want to share that or not.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My wife and I, we used to watch Friends together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what goes on that show...
It's not exactly moral, is it? A lot of the stuff there.
Yeah. I mean, I've done the same thing with different shows, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it affects us in a way that it doesn't bring our minds to Christ all the time, mm-hmm. as it should.
Or subtly starts to make normal things that we would normally be repulsed
yeah,
by.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and another concern of mine was that when, say, the Islamic world looks at the West, they don't necessarily distinguish between Christians and the secularists and what institutions are secular and what institutions are Christian, that sort of a thing.
Right.
They just look at the West and they think Christian. And what they see on TV from Hollywood is, well, the kind of stuff that you see in Friends or any other, you know, 50 Shades of Grey or something like that. Of course, they think Christianity is corrupt and it must be eradicated. And I'm not at all actually surprised that many Muslims think that. As Christians, I think we need to help shape the culture, right? We are yes. part of this democratic society. We should have a voice and we should be a force for shaping culture.
Well, first and foremost, when I think about this, though, I think about me as an individual. Yeah. I need to be in control of my own worldview and engaging and not having my mind in neutral Mm-hmm. You know, as I'm engaging with other worldviews, whether that be through a movie or a song I'm listening to. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the real concerns. Because how then do you be a cultural influencer for Christ mm-hmm. when you're just swept up in the secular current? Now, and something interesting takes place, and I know we've shared this before, but I think it's so critical to understand, is that when you know what you believe and you're secure in your foundation, you're not afraid to hear what other people think. Mm. And this is critical. And then you're willing to engage with people. And you're willing to watch a speech like this, mm-hmm. like Meryl Streep's. And you can engage with it, and you can see where she made good points mm-hmm. and where she didn't and where you disagree. Mm-hmm. And it helps you then to be participating in what's going on in the shaping of your own worldview, let alone the shaping of the worldview, the culture you're living in.
Okay. There's a lot to think about already, and so we'll wrap it up there. But we'll come back next week with more to think about. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. We'll see you next week.